Welcome to Morph Into a New You, part of MHNRnetwork.com. Your host, Johnny Calloway, is the author of several books, including Taming the Dragon, Dragons to Butterflies, The Metamorphosis of a Man, and The Bridge. He will be having conversations with people from all walks of life. Healing really is an inside job that transforms you to become a better version of you. We must change our self-talk and inner dialogue so we can start to believe. A special thanks to our sponsor, Meaningful Expressions, at m-expressions.com. They can take a concept, thought, or personal brand and turn it into a visual masterpiece that you can use to raise awareness about your passion or cause. They've certainly done that with our podcast website. And thank you for joining Johnny as you morph into a new you.
Hello, everybody. I'm Johnny Calloway, host of Morph Into a New You, Changing Thoughts, Changes Lives, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. I want to throw out a big thank you for Kristen Samantha Walker for providing this platform for so many of us to share our voices and for so many people to find the healing they need. Today, we have with us Rachel Grant, author of Beyond Surviving. And Rachel's, I'm going to say her purpose is to help people heal from their sexually abused childhoods. Would that be a fair statement, Rachel?
Most definitely, yeah. Thanks, Johnny.
Okay, I'm going to say hello to Rachel, and I'm going to let Rachel tell you a few things about herself, and then we're going to get this show on the road. Hi, Rachel.
Hey. Hello.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
So glad to be here with you. Hello, everybody.
So you want to tell the audience a little about Rachel and what you're doing and where you're going, and then we'll kick into Coming to Believe and Where Hope Begins.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. Well, so nice to be here with you and to be connecting with your community and just to have this opportunity to share my story. You know, these days, life is pretty amazing. I don't have too much to complain about, even when I try to complain, but I really don't have much to complain about. Right now, I work full-time as a sexual abuse recovery coach, and I am really focused on helping survivors of childhood sexual abuse who are really at that place, Johnny, where they're just kind of sick and tired. You know, that feeling of just, you know, I've been working at this, I've been trying to heal, I've been doing different things, but it seems like nothing is really making a difference. And my intention when working with my clients is really all about helping them break free from the pain of abuse so they can move on with their lives, right? Get on to living and enjoying themselves. And that's really where I find myself these days, you know, thriving in this business and in this work. I have a wonderful, loving partner. I feel that I do more of what I want every day and less of what I don't want to do. And feel confident and happy and secure and safe. But it's been a road to get here. For sure. It definitely has not always been this way. When I was 5 years old, my grandfather actually came to live with our family. And I was super excited about that, Johnny, because I had an older brother and sister who really didn't pay me much mind. And so my grandfather arriving was like, oh, yes, like somebody to play with, somebody to give all of my affection and attention to. And so we kind of became fast friends. And about 5 years later, I was 10 years old. And we were sitting out on the front porch swing together like we so often did. He always wore this kind of orange fuzzy sweater that I loved. So I like snuggled up with him. But on this particular day, he began touching me. And I remember, first of all, feeling just very kind of confused and unsure of what was happening and thinking, you know, he didn't really understand where he was touching me, like maybe he just didn't realize. And so I tried to wiggle and get away, but, you know, he gripped me tighter and held on. And eventually, Johnny, I was able to break free and I jumped up. I ran to my parents' bedroom. Gosh, that feeling. It's very distant now, but I can still kind of tap into it, that moment of being just scared and overwhelmed and confused. And surprising still to me to this day, how quickly shame starts. What did I do? I must have caused this. You know, I must be bad. Why is he doing this to me? The abuse went on for some time and it got worse until one day my mom actually just happened to see what was going on. And so she stepped out, she took me away, and she and my dad immediately got him out of our home, which I'm so very thankful for. Having worked with survivors for quite some time, I know when that's not the case, that just adds a whole other layer, right?
Right.
So over the next 16 years of my life, I was in this world of recovery. I was hurt. I was confused. And all of these thoughts were now a part of my day-to-day life, that I'm worthless, I'm unlovable, I can't trust anyone, everybody's going to take advantage of me. And all of those thoughts were there with me throughout a very long abusive relationship, through every suicide attempt, through every day just waking up and not really kind of dreading the day, until I was about in my mid-20s. And I was sitting in this new apartment, having just been divorced. I didn't have anything in this apartment, Johnny. It was so sparse. I like had a sleeping bag and a lamp. And it was one of those like, oh shit moments. Have you ever had one of those, Johnny, where you're like, oh my gosh. Like, right? Hello. Thank you. Yes. Oh my goodness. I just thought, what are you doing, Rachel? Like, this is not working. And if you do not do something different right now, you are just going to spend the rest of your life just struggling and surviving. And so I became really motivated to change, but I didn't know how, of course. And that's what really spurred me on. I became obsessed with answering this question, how do I heal from sexual abuse? And so I started reading everything, and I did my master's in counseling psychology, and I began to study neuroscience. And that's really when things broke open for me. I realized, okay, I can treat trauma like this injury to my brain, and therefore I can create strategies and interventions that are going to help me heal from trauma and guarantee that I don't spend the rest of my life just suffering and in recovery. So bit by bit, all of that came together into what is now the Beyond Surviving program. But it really was just me trying to get myself together first and foremost. But thankfully, when my friends kind of encouraged me to see if it might be of benefit to others, I listened. Now, 11 years later, get to work with men and women all over the place to lead them through this journey that I've been on so that they can really reclaim their lives.
So a couple of questions. You were traumatized, definitely. And in one of my many shows with Dr. Eric Gentry, the first show with him, he talks about how when we're traumatized, we're robbed of hope and that the world becomes an unsafe place to live. One of the things you mentioned, actually, is that we don't trust anybody and we don't even trust hope. We're afraid to hope because of the disappointment that we attach to hope. So it's like, it's easier just to not hope. So when you were traumatized, what did you turn to? What did you do to try to deal with the traumatization initially?
Well, initially I tried to pretend that it wasn't there. Right? I just tried to bury it all in the sand and just go on with my life. Like, I'm fine. There's nothing to see here. It's no big deal. And that was pretty much all of my teenage years, pretending and trying to push and shove it all away. And of course, it wasn't being shoved away. I was hurting and I was struggling in relationships and struggling to trust, but I was convincing myself that I was really okay. And when I hit my like 18, 19 in that range, and I decided, okay, I really got to face this. That's when I started doing some of kind of the traditional things we do. I, you know, started going to therapy, reading some books, doing some group work. But that was probably the time in my life when things felt the most hopeless, even though I was finally facing and looking at things. I was also overwhelmed, Johnny, with this feeling and this sense that I am going to be spending the rest of my life sorting this out. This feels like a life sentence. And not only did it feel like a life sentence, I had some really terrible people communicate that to me. Therapists. Oh, this is, you know, something you're always going to deal with. It's always going to be this way. You're broken, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, well, then why bother?
Right.
Why bother? If all I have to look forward to is a life of constantly hurting and but finding cuter and cuter ways to manage that, but it's never really gone.
You know, it's
what odd. Should I do?
It's odd. A lot of people don't like to hear me say this, but I really don't care. I've said for years now that most therapists become therapists because they need therapy. The sad part is if they haven't done their work, they can't help you with yours. It's important if you're looking for someone that you can talk to try and figure out, have they dealt with their own demons? You know,
and most
that
definitely.
Thing that you were talking about facing it. one of the things in one of my books is we must face the dragon to become the butterfly. There's a beauty within all of us that we take all these lies and we cover them up with these lies. But that butterfly is in there.
Yeah.
But if we don't look at the fear, if we don't look at the pain, if we don't look at the hurt, if we don't look at it, we can't say that it's not real. But in looking at
definitely.
It, we can't actually dismiss it. That's not dismissing it like it's like, oh, it's just not real. That's denial. But dismissing it by coming to find out that it is, in fact, a lie, it is vital to us. I looked over your website pretty well and researched who you are and what you do. In my mind, you're a butterfly.
Thanks.
What happens, in my mind, when we start exploring and investigating, it's like when the caterpillar goes into the chrysalis and we explore the pain to find its spiritual purpose. And we come out the other side capable of helping people like you do and doing what you do. It's very important. Where did you begin to start realizing there was hope? What was the first thing that kind of was like that? You had your oh shit moment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was your aha moment? Maybe I can. Maybe there's more for me.
Well, I was having a conversation one day. I was in this program and this is like just a social leadership program. And we had been asked to think about something that we would like to create in our community, like an event that we would want to put on and create. And I had the idea of bringing together men and women who were survivors of sexual abuse to share their stories, but I was really stuck on what to call it. And so I was talking one day about this stuckness with one of the other participants and telling him a little bit about my story and where I was coming from. And he says to me, Johnny, you know, Rachel, I have to say you're such a survivor and you've been through so much. And it's just really beautiful to see how you've survived and you've continued to press on. For whatever reason, that day, that made me really mad. I just got super angry at this guy. I started like, you know, I don't know if I can curse on your show, but I was like, F that. I am not down to just survive my life. And I just kind of went on this rant. But eventually what came out of it was me saying, there has to be something more. I have got to get beyond surviving my life. And so that was my light bulb moment. And I decided that is the question that I'm going to keep asking myself until I have an answer. What is next? If I have a struggle because of abuse and trauma, fine. But what am I going to do about that? What skill do I need to learn? What do I need to do on an internal systems level? Is there something I need to heal neurologically? Is there something I need to heal on a nervous system level? Is there just a practical skill or tool that I need to learn to help me with that? And so I have a background in education. In my former life, I was an elementary school teacher. And so I think very like, okay, what would be the curriculum? What would be the lessons? What order would I have to do things in order to get those results? And so as I started doing my master's and I started studying neuroscience, I just kept coming back to that question. And as I started to see little things shifting, that began to create more hope. I also read a very important book. It's actually just called Hope. By Stan Van Hooft. That book gave me a framework in which to think about hope, like what it really is, how do we acquire it, why is it important? And so as I started putting those pieces together, one of the things I really started to understand about hope is that it is the gateway to transformation or change. So I'll give you like a little example scenario about this. Let's imagine that you're in a session or you're doing some of your own personal reflection and you realize something. You have one of those like aha insight moments. Like, for example, one of them for me was, you know, I keep sabotaging my relationships because I'm afraid of being vulnerable. If we have that insight, but we don't have hope that transformation is real, that we can change, that there's something else possible or available to us, then we'll have that insight. And we might actually go out and read all sorts of books about vulnerability or, you know, we become very book smart about trauma, but we won't actually take any action because in the background will be this feeling of why bother? It's not going to make any difference. There isn't anything I can really do to change this. Whereas as soon as we inject hope into the situation, we go, okay, here's the issue. Now I can actually take action. Yes, I can make different choices. Yeah, I could try this, that, or the other because it could make a difference. It might actually change something. And so to my mind, hope is really, it's like the gas for the car. It's really what makes us go when it comes to change and transformation. And if we're too far on this end of the spectrum where it's despair or hopelessness, then we just become stuck and unwilling to try. And so our attention then all becomes about restoring hope in the first place. I just went on and on. Johnny, you still there? Are you still there, Johnny?
I'm here, darling. I'm here. I was just enjoying you going.
Oh, man.
Hope is really where it begins. It really is. And thankfully, what seems to happen is as we exercise the hope, and I'm going to say the hope muscle, as we exercise the hope muscle, eventually the hope starts to transfer into trust.
Yeah.
And it's no longer hope. It becomes like a knowing. It's like, I know if I do the work. And as you were talking, one of the things, I've worked with a lot of people over the course of time about trying to help them get through. And unfortunately, I've encountered a lot of people that read the books like you were talking about, and they read everything that comes their way. They study everything they can possibly study, but unfortunately, they read that stuff like it's a good novel.
Mm.
Most of those type books are meant to be like a textbook, something we study, something we apply to our lives. If we don't, it's just information. I had an old friend in Kentucky, actually was my Alcoholics Anonymous sponsor. He said, wisdom is what happens when knowledge has been applied.
Mm. Love that.
And when we read one of those books and then we set it down and we go, okay, how do I put that to work in my life? Not just like, oh, that was a good book. I really loved what they had to say. Okay, but what do I do with it?
Exactly.
You know? And that's why people like you are so important, because what's really cool, I can tell from talking to you and our other conversation we had, you're not talking about what you read. You're talking about what you experienced, what you put in your life. And it brought you through the other side, and now you're sharing that. And that is incredible, because I learn as much from watching people as I do from listening to people.
Mm-hmm.
And when people show me in their life experience what they've done to get through what I'm going through, that truly inspires me. That motivates me. That gets that hope fuel that you were talking about going.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I think that, well, there's a couple of different thoughts that are coming to mind, but you know, one of the things that I started to experience was this feeling of being very trauma informed, if you will, or book smart, as I've mentioned. And boy, I had all the lingo, right? I triggered PTSD, flashbacks, you know, I could speak it all. I understood it all. But what I realized was I had to make a switch into being street smart about trauma. I couldn't just keep acquiring information. I had to find this bridge between acquiring and understanding and knowing things and applying them to my life so I could actually shift and transform the way I felt, the way I thought about myself, the way I interacted with people, the way that I perceived or interpreted situations, what I even thought was possible or available to me. And that's one of the biggest missions that I'm on in my life, because I think so many of us who have experienced sexual abuse or any trauma get stuck at that survivor stage, the understanding, the acquiring of information, the, you know, gaining insight. And there's nothing wrong with that stage of healing. It's important. It's a stepping stone, but I want to make sure people know it's a stepping stone,
right?
It's not the end all be all of it's not where you're meant to live. It's where you're meant to spend a period of your time in recovery and then go on to what's next. So yeah. Cheers to that, right?
Yeah, I'm over exactly. here. I'm dancing. I'm doing a happy dance over here, because I love to hear that, because so many people do exactly what you said. They get stuck in studying and in reading and researching, and it has to be put to work. It has to be used. You know, I'm a devout student of A Course in Miracles, and there is a ton of information in there. But my experience has been information not applied can be detrimental, because it becomes, if you're the kind of person that likes to beat yourself up,
then
information, if you don't apply it, it becomes one more bat that you, well, I read on page and I'm still not doing it. So I'm still.
Oh, you are so right about that.
So
yeah, it becomes another hammer that we use to shame ourselves and make ourselves bad or wrong. Is why do I know all of this? Why do I have all this understanding, but nothing is changing? right?
Right.
And that's, you know, what I often say, you know, talking about and understanding trauma is not healing
no.
trauma. It's talking about and understanding it, which is, again, important, but the healing part comes from a different place. One of the things that I thought a lot about when I decided to kind of formalize what I had done in healing was how do I approach this in a very step-by-step, little bit by little bit way? Because when we are coming from a place like that, most of my clients start out by saying, I have tried everything. I have done this and I've done that. I've done this. Like, why is this going to make any difference? How is this going to be different? And I get that. I 100% understand and welcome that skepticism, because so many survivors have that experience of trying different things and it not making a difference. And I think part of that is, one, things not being kind of given that to them in an order in which their system can really integrate it and process it. And two, too much too soon, which spurs on hopelessness, right? So if you're given a big task, and you're not ready for that task, you're not ready on a systemic level, you're not ready on a skills level, then the only outcome is really to not succeed. And all that does is add in or feed into that feeling of, I'm not good enough. See, I really am broken. See, nothing really is going to make a difference. Wow. So I think another key piece of hope and gaining hope and remaining hopeful is setting in front of ourselves doable tasks. So that we get these little nuggets. Like, I loved what you were saying earlier about, like, a little bits, it moves into trust. And so as we take these little steps, oh, that actually made a difference. That worked. Okay, let me try this little thing. Okay, oh, that's working too. And then bit by bit, we become more confident, we become more hopeful and more trusting that as we apply ourselves, we really can shake off all of that trauma, shake off all those lies and the messages that we received from the abusers.
Wow. I tell the people that I'm privileged to get to work with, that you got to learn to celebrate the little victories, because
for sure.
We are so accustomed, when we've been traumatized, when we're coming from that shame based, we are so accustomed to, like, I used to do this thing. I get on the treadmill and I say, I'm going to do 30 minutes. I get to 27 minutes every time. And I'd start telling myself I didn't need to finish. 27's enough. 27's enough. Well, at one point I said, okay, wait, I've done 27. I can do one more. And I would do the 28. And then I would, and when I was done and I actually got myself through those last 3 minutes, 1 minute at a time, it's like, yay,
right on.
Yay, congratulations, Johnny, you actually did 30 minutes. Next thing you know, I was doing an hour.
Right.
Well, I'm an addict, so that's how I do things. It's like, you know.
Johnny. All in or not at all.
Yeah. So
once you crossed that 3 minute hurdle, you were like,
oh,
bam,
yeah.
I'm good.
So it is very important to learn to celebrate the little victories and start working the I can muscle. I can
yeah.
do this. I mean, I'm 60 years old in a couple of months. I'm not one that believes that if you think positively, that next thing you know, I can be an NBA All-Star. But I do believe the things that I dream for can come real in my life if I'm being practical.
Yeah.
I'm watching things happen in my life every day that I'm like, wow, did I do that? I mean,
yeah.
And it's like, yes, I did do that.
Yeah. You know, can I say something there real quick? Because that really just sparked a thought in me, which is, I know that 20 years ago, back at that stage of my journey, if I heard you and I talking, one of the thoughts that would be running in the background would be, yeah, well, that's nice for them. Yeah, that worked for them, but it won't work for me. And I just feel a need to kind of address that for just a moment, because I think that comes up a lot. It's understandable where it's coming from. We can so easily, you know, watch other people around us succeeding and transforming and healing, and then we will find a way to say, but not for me. It's not for me. It won't work for me. So first of all, if you're listening and you're feeling that, you know, just know that it's really normal. It's understandable. And I want to just offer that there isn't anything special about me or Johnny, as awesome as we are. We're not unique or special. You know, what I love about everything that I learned about neuroscience and the nervous system is that, with only a few minor exceptions, the brain is the brain. We all have the same components of the brain, the same structures. The brain responds regardless of whether it's the brain inside of my head, the brain inside of your head, or anybody else's. If you do X, the brain will do why. And so all that really has to happen is truly understanding how to work with those systems that are not unique. They're just systems. And so that for me started to make a really big difference when I started to really understand, okay, like if I break my arm and you break your arm, the bone heals the same way. It needs the same things. So if my brain has been injured because of trauma or my nervous system has been injured because of trauma, then the injury I'm experiencing is very similar to the injury that any other survivor of abusive trauma is experiencing. So there must be standard interventions that will work for you, regardless of who you are or what your experience is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm off my soapbox now.
No, yeah, I love my soapbox. I love it. I have a tendency to get on one myself. I've had people read my book, Dragons and Butterflies, and then say to me, yeah, but Johnny, you're different. I'm like,
yeah.
Did you read the book? I went through hell. You're telling me I'm special because I went through that? No, I just made the decision to say no. I'm not going to let this be the rest of my life. And if I could say anything to anybody, you can make the same decision. You don't have to stay stuck in being a victim.
Cheers to that.
Yeah. You know, and that whole, we could have a whole show, and hopefully we will at some point, about that whole victim thing.
Yeah.
Because for me, I had to let that go because I lived my life in being a victim. And it was like, the world was out to get me. And simultaneously, I was using being a victim to justify a bunch of really stupid stuff I was doing just because I wanted to do it. But you would be doing it too if you had all this stuff happen to you. So I had to learn to take responsibility for what part of that was mine. That's why one of the things that really drew me to wanting to do this show with you is when I got the email from your assistant. At the bottom of the email, it says, what we think we create. I almost got up and did a happy dance just when I read that, you know, because I truly believe that we have to do what I call thought management, because what we let hang out in our head shows up in our life somewhere. So
it's so true. Yeah, that really, that little phrase came through to me when I was studying Buddhism, actually. And I came across this line in the text, all we are is the result of what we have thought. And I want to make a clear distinction here because this does come up for people sometimes. I'm not talking about when we're children. I'm not talking about when we are under the authority of other people and other people's choices. I'm talking about as adults. Here, when we are the authors of our lives, when we have authority, when we have authorship and we have choice. I think so much of what I did in my life, Johnny, was I relinquished responsibility in my adult self and in my adult life, and I kept holding responsibility as a child for things that had happened to me. When it's the exact opposite. We want to do the exact opposite. Release ourselves from the shame. Release ourselves from the responsibility of the abuse and trauma and take on ownership of our lives here today. And a huge part of that is being in charge of our thoughts and recognizing that we do not have to be at the mercy of our brain, that we can actually put our hands on the steering wheel and we can guide it. We can direct it. We can decide what thoughts we're going to give prominent position to or not.
Well, for me, since the show is about hope, when I realize that I am the master of my mind, it is not the master of me. That's where hope really took hold and started to become trust, because I could see that if I would catch a thought running through my mind that had run through my mind 10,000 times and always led me down a rabbit trail. And I could say, okay, I need to think something else. Because I have this little thing in my Morph Into a New You process. It's kind of like, I call it the math equation. A thought creates a feeling. A feeling creates a belief. A belief creates a behavior, and our behavior becomes our life. So literally, if we can change the thought, we can change our life. But I have to be conscious of what I'm thinking. And so many times we just let our mind run amok and not realizing how we're using those thoughts to keep recreating the same patterns in our lives.
It's exactly right. One of the things that I work with my clients on is, first of all, identifying those patterns of thought. But quite frankly, a lot of people who come to me, they already know what they are, right? Every once in a while, we uncover a layer or a belief system that's there that they weren't aware of at all. But most of the time, it's like, I have all these thoughts in my head, but I just don't know what to do with them. And I call those our autopilot thoughts. They are the thoughts that we have become programmed to think over time through repetition due to abuse, due to the way that neurological pathways work and memory works in the brain. When we're having an experience, the brain is kind of lazy, really, Johnny. At the end of the day, the brain is like, I'm not working any extra over here. So it just goes where it's most commonly gone before. Until you start to do something about that, you can stop that process. You can interrupt that process and you can create new pathways that hold new beliefs or new ideas or new associations. And as you pay attention to those and reiterate those more often than not, then those old pathways get pruned away when you're sleeping. And so you can really literally replace the neurological pathways and the thoughts that are going to be dominant in your day to day.
I can't remember who said it right now, but someone talked about what you're talking about as like grooves in a record.
Yep.
We get grooved in there and we don't realize, we feel powerless over those thoughts. Mm-hmm. That's why it's important for me when I say, I'm the master of my mind, it's not the master of me, because those thoughts that aren't serving me. And this is Ora Nadrich's whole process with her book Says Who. She has a list of 7 questions that she goes through. So you investigate your thoughts that are not serving you, because so many of us run our lives based on a belief system that we don't even believe just because we were told when we were kids, you know?
Yeah.
And my friend Mary Padlock that I do shows with, she calls it being hypnotized as a child.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And a big part of her healing process is dehypnotization, because it's like, wait a minute, I've been living my life based on this life. For me, personally, the big one was I was a Callaway and I was never going to amount to anything. Mm, and I heard that throughout my whole childhood. You're a drunk that's going to die drunk. So I just bought it and I set out to make it so. So, yeah, hypnotized. We were hypnotized, Rachel. Yeah. And so dehypnotizing ourselves, creating a new groove in the album, all of that is so vital.
It is. And what's so amazing is that it doesn't actually take a lot of effort and it doesn't take a lot of time. So once we know what interventions to use, so for example, for those of you who are listening, when you find yourself in one of those autopilot thoughts, I'm never going to succeed. I'm only here to be used by other people. I'm ugly. I can't do anything right. You know, like you know what those autopilot thoughts are. They're your like go-to place whenever something goes wrong or when you're feeling upset or triggered. One of the things that you can do that's just so simple is to just say the positive opposite. Even if you don't believe it, it doesn't matter on a neurological level what your emotional relationship is to what you're saying. But if you say, no, I can succeed. I am working towards succeeding. I am beautiful. I am valuable. Now, believe me, there's more work to do than just this, but just this can make a very big difference. And that is one simple way that we can start to take charge of our brain, right? Be the master of our thoughts. Rather than just letting the autopilot thoughts go and go and go and go, we can have a little pause button moment, cut off that by interrupting that process with something as simple as just saying the positive opposite.
Well, it's like taking your mind to the gym and learning.
Exactly. It really is.
Learning to exercise new thoughts. It's amazing the difference it can make in your life. It really, really is.
Yeah.
My God, Rachel, I'm watching the clock.
I know. We've just gone on and on.
and I love it. And I really hope we can do this again, because this is the kind of stuff that makes differences in people's lives. The cool thing in my life is that, you know, there was a period of time when I thought all those years, all that pain, all that hurt was just wasted life. And when I found that my pain could have purpose and that it could have value, it made all of that better.
Yeah.
Because now I can use it. When I can share with somebody, they can say, you too? Or, yeah, me too. Or whatever. And I see that spark, or I hear the spark if I can't see them. It's like, okay. That wasn't wasting time.
Definitely not.
Yeah. Rachel, I want you to take a few minutes here to tell people how they can find you, what's going on. tell them where they can find your book, because we all need to read it. And did you guys hear that? We need to read this book, Beyond Surviving by Rachel Grant. Okay, Rachel, tell us about where we can find you.
Wonderful. So the best place to connect with me is at my website, rachelgrantcoaching.com. And one of the things that I'd like to encourage you to do when you get to the website is download my 3 stages of recovery checklist. This is really going to help you identify where you are in your healing journey, what the goals of each stage are, and what kind of support that you're going to want to get to help you in that stage. And so check that out. Also check out the resources page. You can get to my blog and my podcast and master classes and see what events are coming up there as well. I also encourage you to connect with me on Facebook. I have a really wonderful group, Healing from Sexual Abuse, and it's a great community that's growing every day of folks who are on this journey and looking for support and connection. So feel free to reach out to me via email, coach@rachelgrantcoaching.com. If you're interested in enrolling in the program or checking out the program, the first step is to apply for a Discover Your Genuine Self session, which you can access from the website as well.
Wow, cool. Did you guys get that? All right, let's talk. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Rachel for being here. And I want to let you guys get excited about whenever she's on here again. And I want to say you can find all my podcasts with all the different speakers and teachers I've had on here at johnnycalloway.com. Hope to hear from you. And you guys have a great week. Bye, Rachel.
Bye, Johnny. Thank you so much. Take care, everyone.
Okay, everybody. Thanks for listening. Remember, never give up. Always keep it real and take time to smell the roses. And please sit down and watch a butterfly. Keep up with all that we are doing by going to morphintoanewyou.com. Thank you very much.